Continue to look to get up to my family. Namaste, We've heard how Lord Brahma has seen the incredible potency of Krishna. Not seen all of his potency, but just got a glimpse of a small part of Krishna's potency, because Krishna's potency is unlimited. So no matter how much one sees, it is, you can't compare to the whole, because the whole is unlimited. Because if you take 10% of unlimited, you divide infinity by 10, what do you get?
Infinity.
Yes. Well, if you see something, you cannot say that it is, what part of it is of the Supreme. Because each of the parts is unlimited. So each of the Vishnu forms of the Lord were unlimited, and yet there were countless Vishnu forms. So how powerful is the source of those Vishnu forms? And they were all entering into the body of Krishna, coming out. So Brahma understood something of Krishna's power, and he understood his own insignificance. And he understood that he had no way of understanding Krishna's power. This is what it means to be confronted with God, with the Supreme Lord. It means automatically one becomes humble. Because no matter how great we are insignificant in compared to the Supreme Lord. So automatically, when one becomes Krishna conscious, or conscious of Krishna, or has some realization about Krishna, one becomes completely humble. One's estimation of oneself becomes disappears as being high, because whatever we have, it's completely insignificant. So just like Krishna, whatever he does is completely significant and unlimited and infinite. We, whatever we do, is completely insignificant and limited. And no matter how much we do, even if we do 2 times as much as we're doing, or 10 times as much as we're doing, or 1,000 times as much, or 1,000,000 times as much, it'll still be only insignificant. What do you think about that? That's all we could ever be. Insignificant. But there's one word missing from that description of ourselves that makes the insignificant significant. And that is that all we can ever be is insignificant servants of the significant, of the Supreme Lord. Or even better, or more accurately, insignificant servants of the servant of the servant of the servant. Gopi Bharata Parakamalaya Dasa Dasa Nodas. And then, because of that connection, we become significant. And that is the aspiration of a devotee, not to become significant, but to become connected to the Lord's significance, connected to Krishna, the unlimited, because it's completely natural. Just like you can have an ordinary person, and he's walking down the street, just like everyone else, and no one cares for him. But when he is appointed as the representative in the United Nations of his country, the ambassador, if he says, "I vote for it," the whole country is voting for it. So, and he's still the same person walking down the street, just like everyone else, no, just the same. But when connected to the significant, he become his voice, his opinion, his situation becomes significant. No rattling of plastic bags allowed. Oh, you have to do them all at once. Okay, you can do it in a little more, and then we'll do it. Okay, if you want to. Okay. Now, Brahma has seen something about Krishna, and Krishna's effulgent form in Vrindavan. And not only is he effulgent, he's beautiful. And not only is he beautiful, he's unlimitedly beautiful. Now, how beautiful is unlimitedly beautiful? Or to put it in another way, how attractive must unlimitedly beautiful be? So Krishna, that defines Krishna. He's unlimitedly attractive. So Brahma saw this unlimitedly attractive personality, and because he was humbled, what is the opposite of humbled?
Arrogant.
Arrogant, yes, another word?
Proud.
Proud.
Envious.
Yeah, yes, as soon as you become proud, you become envious of someone else's beauty, because you're not the unlimited, no matter how much beauty or strength or anything you have, you're not unlimitedly. So if someone else comes and has a little beauty, and you feel it's competing with your beauty or intelligence or your knowledge or whatever, or your power or your fame, so everyone becomes a competitor. And then when you're dealing with your competitor, do you wish them well?
Yes.
No. You become envious and wish them to go down, and as if that will make you go up. So because Brahma didn't see Krishna as a competitor, because he wasn't envious, because he wasn't proud, because he was humble, therefore when he saw Krishna, he felt ecstatic instead of envy. Envy is the opposite of ecstasy. And as long as envy sits in the heart, we cannot be ecstatic, because Krishna cannot be in the heart, because we're envious. So Brahma was humbled, even though at first he was proud. But then when he saw some of Krishna's opulence, he became humble, and then he could see Krishna with a clean heart. And he saw Vrindavan, and he saw that Krishna was walking around, a young boy, the unlimited. He didn't think Krishna was unlimited. Excuse me, he didn't think Krishna was a young boy, but he saw Krishna as a young boy, because he had seen all the potencies Krishna, he had seen all the Vishnus come from Krishna, so he didn't get confused and think that Krishna was an ordinary boy like he had before. So now he's going to offer prayers. And obviously his prayers, because he's so intelligent and he's so pure, his prayers, we cannot read them all tonight. If we can just read one, the first one, and then we'll see if we can read more. But this one is so nice. This is a very famous verse. Nomidyate abra vapushe tadidambaraya gunja avatamsa paripitshalasan mukaya vanyasrade kavala vetra vashana venu lakshma shriye mridupate pasupangajaya. So everyone can repeat it from memory now? Wouldn't that be amazing if we could? I mean, not Sanskrit spoken with a Brooklyn accent, but just imagine, there are people like that. I know there was one devotee who was in Vrindavan for a while, a brahmachari, and by the end of the Bhagavatam class, he always knew the verse by heart. What do you think about that, Bhima? Would you like to be like that? Huh? Yeah, well, if you don't know, then you never will be like that, for sure. There's another devotee in Vrindavan. I don't think he's in Vrindavan, actually. But he's blind. Been blind from birth in the Ramanuja Sampradaya. And he knows all 18,000 slokas of the Bhagavatam. and he's blind from birth. And he's completely has one focus. And you know what that one focus is? On the Bhagavatam. All the time he's hearing it from others, he's reciting verses. So if someone said in his last life, would you like to know all the verses of the Bhagavatam? Do you think he would have answered, I don't know, I'm not sure. No. Because everything, our situation now, is situated on our desire. Because of desire, we gain a particular, because of previous desires, we're in the situation we're in now. And that also means that because of our desires now, that will indicate our situation in the future. So if we're materialistic, materialistic means that we think a better situation in the material world. My only problem is I don't have this or I don't have that or I don't have this in the material world and I need one of those or seven of those or a new Rolls Royce or five new Rolls Royces or two new Rolls Royces, three Mercedes, five Ferraris, and one ambassador car. Have you ever seen an ambassador? Have you ever seen one?
Is it a white one?
No. Just see this young generation. They have never seen ambassador cars. They don't make them anymore, so they probably will never see them. Now you'll see Maruti van.
Yeah.
And other things. See? So if we think, if we have our it's so important to get our desires proper, because based on our desires, that will indicate and push us in a future direction in our life. That will dictate what we are in the future, just like our past desires gave us our situation at the present. So what practical advice can you get from that point? Raise your hand. If you can think of some practical advice to yourself, not to others, but to yourself. If your past desires indicate where you are in the present, and your present desires indicate what happens to you in the future, what practical advice will you give yourself? Raise your hand.
Make a conscious effort to cultivate the right desires for the future.
Good point. Yes. And the opposite of that one, or the saying the same thing in a negative way, that we should be careful to not cultivate desires that will be not helpful for us in the future. So therefore the Chaitanya Charitamrita says Brahmanda Brahmate Konya Vagivandi, that we wander all over the universe. The 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita describes this, saying that the universe is like a great banyan tree. You can't tell where it begins, you can't tell where it ends, and the living entities are wandering from branch to branch, sometimes on the higher branches trying to taste heavenly delights, and then sometimes on the lower branches being cast down by their desires and their fate, and then jumping from branch to branch. Oh, I didn't get this in this life. Maybe only if only I was taller, if I was stronger, only if this, if only that. And these are all the desires that invade our hearts. If only I knew how to play harmonium. If only I could sing. If only I knew Sanskrit. If only I could had a great memory. If only this. If only that. If only this. This is what our life is filled with: the planning and scheming and lamentations, what we don't have. And if someone has very deep intelligence, he will cut all those branches of the tree, or cut his relationship with the tree of material desires. This is the recommendation of the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, and should only have one if only, and that one if only should be constant and ever growing in intensity, and that is, if only I had some love for Krishna, if only I had one drop of love for Krishna. or only if I had that sincere desire to love Krishna, and that desire will carry us to Goloka Vrindavan. It's just a matter of time, but it will carry us. Just that sincere desire will bring us home to Krishna's lotus feet. So we want to cultivate that desire. Wow, see? As soon as you say cultivate that desire, some heavenly sounds come from the sky. Okay, turn off your mobile phone. This is too much. Too many heavenly sounds. It's not good. So the first, so Brahma was here. He was practically fainted, and then he got up, and the sincere love and appreciation and awe and reverence and that he had for Krishna, it came out his mouth in his prayers. Now there's quite a few prayers, and this is the first one we read. We read the Sanskrit. Novidyate ambra vapuse tadit ambraya. Tadit means lightning. Ambraya means cloth. His first thing he did was describe what he was seeing directly in front of him. Well, first thing he said is novidyate. He offered his obeisances to the Lord, because he not only saw Krishna's sweetness, but he had seen all the Vishnu forms coming from Krishna. So he also saw Krishna's power. So he thought he was significant before, but then when he saw Krishna's power, he realized Krishna was significant and he was insignificant. So therefore the first thing he did was bow down, because he actually did that. He bowed down with his forehead touching the ground. Somehow he did it, even though his foreheads are meant to see all the four decorations. He was so moved, all his foreheads touched the ground, and with each of his forearms, he was wiping the tears from his eyes. His heart was so moved by seeing this beautiful boy, who he knew wasn't just a boy, but yet he was a beautiful boy. So he describes what he saw. First thing he said is, "Nomi idya," means "Nomi idya." Oh, idya means "O most worshipable one." He offered his obeisances unto you, who is abra vapuse. Vapu means body. Vapuse means his body was abra. It was like a dark cloud, shamam. There's another verse that starts shamam. It is darkish, like a rain cloud. So he offered his obeisances to Krishna, who is dark like a rain cloud, to Didambaraya. And his garments, the cloth he was wearing, his dhoti, was yellow like lightning, giving off an effulgent lightning type color. So this is what he saw. Darkest complexion Krishna. His dhoti was the color of lightning, effulgent like lightning. And gunavatamsa, gunja. So he could have, he understood, because the Vishnu forms were also dark, and they were also wearing yellow silkish dhotis, but none of them were wearing gunjamala around their neck, because only Krishna wears gunjamala around his neck in Vrindavan. So gunja avatamsa paripitsa lasat mukaya, whose face, mukha, was resplendent, and with a peacock feather, paripitsa. He was wearing his gunja berries. He was wearing his, like, earrings. So he was the coolest dresser. Mm. I mean, he was wearing earrings of, now, even in the universities, no one does that when they're being cool. any university students can confirm that. Have you ever seen anyone in the university wearing gunzi earrings like that? I mean, you could really start a fad if you did that. And dressed in yellow garments that were effulgent like lightning. Dark as complexion. And the earrings of Gunjavatamsa, Paripitsalasat Mukhaya, and his face was effulgent and resplendent. Vanyasraje, he was wearing a garland of forest flowers. Even though his mother would always give him so many different ornaments when he went out to the forest, he would dress him with so many jewels and things, Krishna always preferred the ornaments that were offered by the Vrindavan forest and the cowherd boys. So the boys would go out when they would decorate each other, and they would all decorate Krishna, and they would make garlands of the wonderful flowers, and the trees and the plants of Vrindavan were so happy because this was their fruit, the fruit of their existence. The fruit, the purpose of a flowering plant's existence is to give a flower. It's so many leaves and everything. It has a root or sometimes a bulb. And then it comes out and then finally it gives a flower. And therefore the plants in Vrindavan are so happy because those flowers are picked and used in Krishna's service. And so they think that their existence is perfect now because what they are, the fruit of what they are, has been used in Krishna's service to please Krishna. So that it's the same as each and every one of us, because in one sense we are like flowers too, because we have our particular existence, and each of us are individuals. And if you look around the room, you'll see that there are no two exactly the same, no two are even a little bit the same. If you look around, there's no one wearing the same clothes, no one wearing anything the same, and everyone's face is different. So we're all individuals. So when that individuality blossoms in Krishna's service and makes its own specific offerings to Krishna, then that is so pleasing to Krishna. And then when Krishna is pleased, then we are happy. There is no other way that we actually can be happy, unless we learn the art of pleasing Krishna. And if we think that something else can make us happy, then we are welcome to try. And we can report back as soon as I come back from Melbourne. And we can just think, if I had a new, what do I need? I have a new lens for my new camera. I need that. And if I have that lens, then I'll be happy. I'll be able to take photographs of bugs. It's such a good lens. You can go really close. And then I will be happy. But no, I'm not happy. So therefore, I'll take my camera and I'll go somewhere where the bugs are more colorful. And then I'll be happy. And then I'm not happy. Still, even I take pictures that are big, beautiful bugs. And then I have to enter a bug shooting picture contest and win first prize. And then I'll be happy. And then that's still not happy. And then I want it on the cover of National Geographic magazine. And then I'll be happy. And then I'll win the Australian of the Year award for having the best, biggest pictures of bugs. And then I'll be happy. But I still... So this is how we travel all over the universe, from one situation to the next. But the residents of Vrindavan, be they trees or grass or cowherd boys or gopis or elderly members or cows or buffaloes or whatever, or birds, peacocks, whatever, or fish or monkeys, if they can somehow, they know that if I please Krishna, that is the purpose of my life. And they want to do it with such devotion, such love, because they are so spontaneously attracted to him. Because that is the qualification for being in Vrindavan, a spontaneous and completely full attraction that's so powerful there's no room for any other desires in the heart. I want to please Krishna. I want to please Krishna. That's all. That's all I want. So this is very rare and very wonderful. So Gunja Avatamsa, does anyone remember what that means? Gunja Avatamsa? Earrings of Gunja. Do they have Gunja in Nepal?
Gunja means sandal.
Okay, but these are little berries that are red and white and black. Do they have them in Nepal? I've heard rumors that they have them in Australia. Did anyone ever see one in Australia? No, but I've heard rumors. Maybe it's not true. And putti pizza, what does that mean? Peacock feather. He had a peacock feather. And lasat mukaya, his body, he was resplendent, very effulgent and attractive. Mukaya, his face. Vanasraje, he was wearing a garland of forest flowers. Kavala, Vetra, Vishana, Venu, four different things. Kavala means in his left hand he held some rice mixed with yogurt, because that's what he was doing when he was searching for the cowherd boys. Kavala, Kavala Vetra, a stick. The cowherd boys must have a stick, although Krishna, he had a stick tucked in his belt along with his Venu, his flute, and the Kavala in the hand, and Vishana means a buffalo horn. And he would bugle. He used to call the boys sometimes when they would go on, time to go on a picnic or something. Krishna would call them, the cowherd boyfriends, with his buffalo horn. So he had all these things with him. Vashana Lakshma Sriye Mridupade. What does Mridupade mean? His what? His soft, pinkish lotus feet. And all the residents of Vrindavan, especially the young gopis and the elderly gopis, they were always in anxiety that Krishna's soft, tender lotus feet may be inconvenienced or hurt when walking in the Vrindavan forest. This is how they would think. They wouldn't be thinking about their own pleasures or inconveniences. They'd just be worried about Krishna, that when he was herding the cows in Vrindavan, there would be some small pebbles or some thorns or some ankur, some sprouts that were sharp. And Krishna, lotus feet, because they knew Krishna's feet were so soft, and they were pinkish in color and so soft. And when Krishna first started herding the cows, I don't know if it was mother or father, they said they brought him some shoes to wear. And he said, "No, no, mother, I won't wear these shoes." He thought it was adharmic to wear what kind of shoes? Yeah. Leather shoes. This is against the principles of the cowherd community to wear leather shoes. And he said, "I'll only wear them." First he said, "I'll only wear them if you make shoes for the cows also." For all the cows. And Krishna had 900,000 cows. So, and he said, and then they said, mother said, "But the cows already have such, they're wearing they have hoofs, so they don't need shoes." I said, "No, mother, this is adharmic, I won't wear them." But the land is, there's rocks and pebbles and sprouts that are sharp. "No, mother, it is okay. The dust of Vrindavan is so soft, it is like powder. Don't worry." And so Krishna, when Krishna is in Dwarka or Mathura, he would wear shoes. But Vrindavan, this comes out in the pastime of Dhruva Maharaj, when Narada Muni tells Dhruva Maharaj to go to Madhavan, that is marked with the footprints of Krishna, of the Lord. So only in Vrindavan does Krishna walk around without shoes. He's just relaxing. He's taking it easy. Village boy. Gramyavat, like a village boy. So he's completely acting the way he wants to. Just walking around. How many of you, when you were growing up in the village, used to walk around without shoes? Me too. And a lot of the Perth people do that too when they're growing up. And then when you have to put on shoes, it feels so restricted. So Krishna likes to walk around. And sometimes you find parts of Vrindavan that the dust is so thick and so soft, it's really just like powder. You're walking through this powdery earth. Remember that time we went to what was it, near Sasaki villages or something? Mm-hmm. You remember that dust? It was the most amazing. It was like thick too, because the tractors had gone back and forth over it. So the dust was really thick and it was soft. And when you see dust like that in Vrindavan, so thick and soft, do you know what you want to do automatically? Do you know? What would you do?
Walk barefoot.
Yep. But we'd also crawl barefoot and roll around. That's what the devotees do. And you just chant, Krishna, Krishna. And you know what happens when you do something that seems so outrageous as that? You know what happens when you do something like that in Vrindavan? You become so happy. So happy. Next, have you been to Vrindavan?
No.
Well, why?
I'm going to.
When will you go?
Hopefully this year.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And will you roll in the dust to Vrindavan?
Yeah, I will.
Okay. And remember, you're saying that in front of all the devotees, all the Vaishnavas.
Click a picture, please.
Yeah, a selfie. Put it on your Facebook. You have a Facebook? I told you that story. You weren't here, so I'll tell it again. One time I was on the Vrindavan Parikrama Marg, and I saw a sadhu. And I was taking photographs, because I like to take photographs in Vrindavan. And he saw I had a camera, you know, big beard and everything. And he said, "You can take my photo?" And I said, "Okay." So he leaned against one of the trees of Vrindavan in a pose, like this. And I took a photo. And I showed him. He said, "Oh, very good. You can put it on my Facebook." True. Did I tell you that before? Yeah, but it's funny. It's true. Another time I was on a train coming from Delhi, and we were, and there was a lot of rain, and we were getting close to the Mathura station, and there were all the sadhus were getting ready to go off. So there was one sadhu, and suddenly I hear a phone ring, and he said, "Oh," and he, underneath his cloth, he pulled out a phone and started talking to someone. As he was talking, the phone rang, another phone rang, and he went, "Oh." And I laughed. I just pointed and he laughed, and he laughed too. He thought it was so funny. So, Vana Sridhay Kavala. Vaitra Vasana Vena. What does Vasana mean? Vasana. Vasana. It means the bugle. Kavala is the food. The Christmas holy yogurt mixed with rice. Vanya is Sridhe. The garland of forest flowers. So Krishna looks so beautiful. Lakshma Sriye Midupade Pasupangajaya. Pasupangajaya means the sun. of the one who protects the pashu, the animals, the cows, and that is Nanda Maharaj, oh son of Nanda Maharaj, who looks in this beautiful way. Who can remember something of how Krishna looked, what Brahma saw when he looked at Krishna? Raise your hand if you can remember something. Yes.
He had a yellow lightning colored dhoti and earrings made of...
That's two things. You got earrings made out of gunjavas. Yes. Another something else about how he looked.
The flute.
Huh?
The flute.
Excuse me?
The flute.
He had a flute.
Peacock feather.
A garland made of forest.
Wild
garland of forest
Bugle.
Flowers.
Bugle.
A stick. And in his hand, remember the Sanskrit word?
Kavala.
Kavala Vaitra Vasanu Venu. Yes. Midupade. What does Midupade mean? His feet were so soft and he was resplendent. It means he falls and beautiful. And one other thing that I remember.
Beautiful skin.
Yeah, what color? Shamam. Yeah. Dark, no midya. So, oh, worshipable one. So here's the translation. Lakshma Srijay Midupade Pashubanga Jaya. So he's offering his obeisances to the son of Nanda Maharaj, but not just because his father is the king of the cowherds, but because he's seen. He's so worthy of worship. He's seen all the Vishnu forms coming in and out of his body. So he's not bewildered and thinking Krishna is an ordinary boy anymore. And that's what he was bewildered previously, and that's why he wanted to test. That's why he wanted to test Krishna. Here's the translation. Lord Brahma said, and he said this with feeling and tears coming from all of his eyes, "My dear Lord, you are the only worshipable Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And therefore I offer my humble obeisances and prayers just to please you." So this is bhakti. But something is done with no other purpose other than to please the Lord. Anya bilasita sanyam jnana kama anavita anukulena krishna anasilam bhakti. This is first, and this kind of bhakti is what's required, not misra bhakti, not mixed bhakti, but bhakti that is pure is required to actually attain prema bhakti. This is described by Srila Jiva Goswami in Bhakti Siddhartha. And actually Brahma, his bhakti, he had bhakti, but it was mixed with Aishwarya Gyan, knowledge of Krishna's power. So he was offering his prayers. "You are the only worshipable Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore I offer my humble obeisances and prayers just to please you." He had no other motive except to please Krishna. "O son of the king of the cowherds." Which word was that? Does anyone remember? The king of the cowherds, the son of the king of the cowherds. Do you remember? Pashupanga Jaya. Jaya means the son. Pashu means the animals. Pashupanga Jaya. Oh, son of. So I'm offering these prayers and my obeisances to you just to please you. "Oh, son of the king of the cowherds, your transcendental body is dark blue, like a new cloud. Your garment is brilliant like lightning. And the beauty of your face is enhanced by your gunji earrings and the peacock feather on your head. Wearing garlands of various forest flowers and leaves, and equipped with a herding stick, a buffalo horn, and a flute, you stand beautifully with a morsel of food in your hand." So This is one of the most important verses of the Bhagavatam, one of the most beautiful descriptions of Krishna. They are considered three especially beautiful descriptions of Krishna. And this is the third one. There are two, and the other two are considered one by one steps a little bit higher. But this is the considered one of the most, the best of all descriptions. It's so beautiful. I'll read it again. And you can try to picture what Brahma is seeing, because we can see it through his words. My dear Lord, you are the only worshipable Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And therefore I offer my humble obeisances and prayers just to please you. O son of the king of cowherds, your transcendental body is dark blue like a new cloud. Your garment is brilliant like lightning, and the beauty of your face is enhanced by your gunji earrings and the peacock feather on your head. Wearing garlands of various forest flowers and leaves, and equipped with a herding stick, a buffalo horn, and a flute, you stand beautifully with a morsel of food in your hand. Now here is the comment here by our BBT commentators. In the previous chapter, Brahma, the creator of the universe, tried to bewilder the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, by stealing his cowherd boyfriends and calves. But by a slight, small exhibition of Krishna's own mystic potency, Brahma himself was completely bewildered. And now, with great humility and devotion, he offers his humble obeisances and prayers unto the Lord. The word kavala in this verse, does anyone remember what kavala means? Yeah, the food, the rice mixed with yogurt and with fruit, all mixed together. Refers to a morsel of rice mixed with yogurt that Krishna held in his left hand. So this was one of the things that bewildered Brahma. His boys, he doesn't even know he's not supposed to put his food in his left hand. He's such a village boy. How is it possible that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead? According to Sanatana Goswami, the Lord held a cowherding stick and a buffalo horn pressed under his left arm. And his flute was placed under his belt. Beautiful young Krishna, decorated with multicolored forest minerals. The cowherd boys, when they would go out, it's described that especially Govanand Hill was very famous for having different colored minerals attached to it. So the cowherd boys would take, just like the pujaris do with the deities, when they decorate the deities, they would take some little water, and they would take a twig or something, and make the end very, very, very soft, like a brush. And then they would take a little water, just how that, you know how the pujaris go like this, so that they, you don't know that, but the pujaris know that they go like this, so they can control and make the dots just perfect. So they would just decorate Krishna with different dots. In ISKCON, we call them gopi dots, when the deities are decorated. But not only the gopis wear them, the gopas wear them too, and Krishna wears them. And different colored minerals and different designs on his cheek and his earrings and his effulgent face and a turban upon his head. And the turban sometimes had pashupanga. It had the rope that the cowherd boy, when he's older, they would carry a rope for tying the hind legs of the cows when they would milk them. So Krishna's rope, the rope he had, it was decorated with pearls. So Krishna is Natabara. He's dressed always like an actor on the stage, the best of dancers, in a dramatic costume. He's very, very particular about how he dresses, Krishna. So he looks so beautiful in this way. So he was all decorated with the minerals of forest, and his hair came down. He was wearing earrings made out of gunji. You know, Have you ever seen a Gunja berry?
No.
Okay, here's your second assignment. You have to, when you go to Vrindavan, when will you go? What month?
I have no idea. Hopefully this year.
So now it's hopefully, but you before it was. But anyway, it's very good that you are hoping. You should send an SMS to your mother and tell her that you want to go to Vrindavan. And your father. No, I mean, I'm only joking. But you could always see Gunja. But around Kartik time, the Gunja plants, they give their seeds. So these are the seeds of the plants. They're creepers. And they're reddish. And sometimes there's white ones, just red and white and black. Or red and black, mostly, I think. Little seeds. And they make them into necklaces. And when Raghunath Das Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, was visited in Vrindavan by whom? What associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited Sanatana Goswami in Vrindavan? I'll give you a hint. He was a pundit. You got the second word, right? Jagarananda pundit. He went to Vrindavan. He was in a bit of an angry mood with Mahaprabhu because Mahaprabhu, he was such a renunciant, he was such a sannyasi, and he was very, very thin, very, very thin, and he wouldn't sleep in a bed. He would only sleep on the floor. He would put his cloth on the floor. And Jagannanda and all the devotees felt so much pain because in separation from Krishna, his body became very thin. So the devotees felt pain to see his pain, that he would just be sleeping on the floor with no mattress or anything like that. So Jagannanda Pandit made a quilt out of cotton with a pillow. And he asked Govinda, Mahaprabhu's servant, please give this to Mahaprabhu and ask him to lie on it, so otherwise it's too difficult for us to see this. So Mahaprabhu said, Govinda said, Jagannanda, he said, please accept this for you to lie down. And Mahaprabhu said, I'm a renunciant. I will only sleep on the floor. Next thing they'll bring a big fancy bed for me to sleep in too. And then he said, who made this and asked you to give this to me? And Govinda said, Jagannanda. And Mahaprabhu became because they had a special rasa. And Jagannanda Pandit, he would give Mahaprabhu things. He gave him some oil. When he came back from Bengal, he brought some sandalwood oil that he and Murari Gupta was a doctor, that made so Mahaprabhu could rub it on his head and it would keep him cool. And then Jagannanda gave that to Govinda and said, please give this to Mahaprabhu. And then Mahaprabhu said, if I put this oil on, this fragrant oil, I'm going to walk in the street and everyone's going to laugh at me. Look at this sannyasi, he's wearing this fragrant oil. He probably has 100 wives with him. He's such a bogus person. And you want to make me a laughing stock. And then, so when Jagannanda came, he said, Jagannanda, you should take this oil and offer it to Lord Jagannath, and then the fruit of all your work will reach its fulfillment. And Jagannanda said, he saw the oil and he got so angry. He had a temperament that was quite angry. He said, who is speaking these lies to you that I have brought some oil for you? I never brought any oil for you. And he picked up the pot full of oil and threw it to the ground and broke it all over the floor and walked out. And he went back to his house. And he locked the door, and he went inside and lied down and wouldn't get up and wouldn't eat or anything. So Mahaprabhu, after 3 days, Mahaprabhu went to him and said, Jagannanda, please, I'm going to go to the temple now. You cook for me. I want to eat the food that you cook, and then you sit with me and eat. So when Jagannanda brought him the quilt, and then he refused it, and he asked Govinda, who asked you to bring this quilt for me? And he said, Jagannanda. Prabhupada became a little bit afraid. Oh, what's going to happen next if I don't take it? So anyway, Swarup Damodar worked out a way that he took some, because Mahaprabhu would lie down on the bark of a plantain tree, of a banana tree. So Swarup Damodar took the leaves of a banana tree, and with his nails he took the plantain tree and he made very, 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 very fine, like made it soft. And then they took one of Mahaprabhu's cloths and made like a little mattress and put all this very soft in it, like that. And then all the devotees begged Mahaprabhu to please accept this, and after a long time Mahaprabhu accepted, and they were so relieved, so Mahaprabhu wouldn't lie on the cold hard floor only. But Jagannanda, who had offered him the quilt, outside he was happy, but inside he was very, very unhappy. So he said, I want to go to Vrindavan. Please give me permission to go to Vrindavan. And Mahaprabhu finally gave him permission to go to Vrindavan. And there, he stayed with Sanatana Goswami. And then when he was leaving to go back, Sanatana Goswami gave him some gifts from Mahaprabhu. He gave him, if I remember, three things. He gave him some fruit from a tree called the Pilu tree, and he gave him a Govardhan Shila, and he gave him also a gundam, a garland of gundamala, of these beads. So gundamala represents Srimati Radharani in the Giriraj Shila that he gave him. That's Krishna. So Sanatana Jagannanda gave those and the fruit to Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu kept the Gunjamala garland and the Giriraj Shila, and then he gave the devotees the Pilu fruit to take his coming from Vrindavan, some remnants, some prasad from Vrindavan. And Mahaprabhu kept those for a long time. And then when Raghunath Das Goswami, when Mahaprabhu was very pleased with Raghunath Das Goswami's incredible renunciation, he presented him with the Giriraj Shila and the garland of Gundamala. And Mahaprabhu and Raghunath Das Goswami, by his deep, because he was so deep, he said, he's giving me residence near Govardhan. And because the Gundamala represents Srimati Radharani, he's giving me the service of Srimati Radharani. And then Mahaprabhu taught him how to worship the Giriraj in a very simple way, the Giriraj Shila, but with so much devotion. So Gundamala is very nice. So you have to see Gunja when you're there, okay?
Yeah.
Are there any questions at this point? Or sorry, after 8? Any questions or comments? Yes.
You're talking about the desires in the beginning. So there are desires, obviously, past desires. If obviously we try not to have the desires which are not favorable to devotional service, and those desires, because we had them at one stage, do they...
It's like an infection. So what to do about the material desires that infect our consciousness? So there are, of course, many things that can be said. One is, we chant very sincerely, we understand them as foreign invaders, like an infection from our natural consciousness, and we try not to cultivate them, because that's... A devotee has them, perhaps, and he feels humbled, because here I am, I'm supposed to be a devotee, and look at me. So he prays to Krishna, and he chants with a lot of sincerity, so that his desire to serve Krishna. Like the sun will purify the dark and improper desires he has in the heart. And of course chanting. So we want to increase the positive and minimize the negative. Because after all, they get in our way. And like Dhruva Maharaj, he had a material desire and he went to Krishna and said, fulfill the desire, and Krishna fulfilled it, and then he felt terrible because he didn't get what he really wanted. So it's a long and complicated, not complicated, but and we try to satisfy our material desires in such a way that they bring us closer to Krishna. Like if we like fine food, we eat fine prasadam. If we like wonderful looking clothes, we dress Krishna in a wonderful way and look at Krishna. And if we have you know, desires to become famous and wealthy, so we become famous and wealthy and use that in Krishna's service. So we may have to go a bit this way, not directly, but we'll be going like this or like this or like this, but at least we won't be going in the opposite direction that we want to go. And we become humble. Yet, the more we desire to love and serve Krishna, the more painful it is to have these inconsistencies in our heart. And the materialists, they want to cultivate their desires, make them grow. And the devotee wants to cultivate his desires too, but he wants to cultivate the spiritual desires, and as much as he practically can, neglect the material desires. We can't imitate the great acharyas of the past and present, but can hope for some mercy. We try our best to serve those more advanced, associate with devotees, and hear Srimad Bhagavatam, chant sincerely, etc. Our process is to increase the spiritual content of our life so that it bursts into flame and decrease on the material side. Keep good association is very important. Yeah, important question. But a general answer.
This is a famous verse, isn't it?
This one, yeah. Yes. Did you want to say something about it?
No, I was just wondering if it's in
this verse and the verse in the 21st chapter, beginning Bahar Pitam Natavaravapu, that's considered the number one description, and then the one where the Brahmanas' wives came to see Krishna, when they see Krishna, that's number two, beginning with Shamam.
That's sort of, those 1, 2, 3 are three individual groups seeing Krishna.
According to their...
Their eyes.
Yes. So the top one is the Gopi's vision of Krishna.
Are there additional details that they see that Brahma doesn't see?
They see him playing his flute. He's Dara Sudeya Purayan Govind, to his lips and playing his flute. And the second one, beautiful, but no flute pastimes, but there's not the kind of obeisances, there's more reverence here from Brahma. No vidyate, all worshipable one. But what motivates the more directly resonance of Vrindavan is not because they see him as worshipable because of his sweetness and beauty and they're attracted to him rather than because of his power. Mm-hmm. So there's differences in realization.
Rama wanted to see his power.
And he did. He was a demigod. He got a glimpse. Any other questions or comments? So Krishna willing, we'll see you soon. After Janmashtami, after Prabhupada's Vyasa Puja, we'll start classes again. And Janmashtami is Monday, yes? On a Monday, the 18th. So we'll have a wonderful festival at the temple. Is that where it's going to be?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So have a wonderful festival. Celebrate. Yeah. Krishna willing. My plan is to be here. And yeah, it would be so nice with all the devotees chanting, hearing about Krishna, worshipping Krishna. And Sisi Konatai, thinking about Krishna's pastimes, and the devotees will perform drama. Is there a drama this year? Do you know?
Yes.
Are you in a drama this year?
I'm trying to get people.
Are you going to tell us what it's about? Or is it a secret?
No. In the, what Kamsa, appearance of Lord Krishna.
Kamsa?
Oh, sorry.
I mean, yeah, no. You said Krishna, but I just mentioned Kamsa. Such a rascal.
I don't know.
Yes, you do know. He's a rascal. Yes or no? You think he was a good guy? He's trying to kill Krishna. You know, good guy is a New York expression, excuse me. Oh, it's also a story, isn't it? But Kamsa was terrible. You know why he was so terrible? Because he had bad friends. Mm-hmm. And bad association. Mm-hmm. And less than that. Sometimes we become a little bit good. But then his friends would tell him, say, don't be good, be bad. So keep in good association. Are you going to play Kamsa in the play?
Yes.
Oh, no wonder you know this Kamsa. But don't get too much into it. Okay? I mean, don't like start treating others in that way. I don't think it's funny. He was terrible. He was a real rascal. Who's going to be Krishna if you're Kamsa?
I don't know. It's just appearance.
Just an appearance. The real important person is Kamsa in this drama. I get it now.
I don't know. I haven't read the script yet.
Okay. Make sure you read it before the drama.
Oh, sorry.
I'm teasing you a little bit, sorry. Okay, good. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Yes.
Prajan, just one last question.
Yes.
I want to clear up what you just said before. When we've got material desires, we have to gradually get. Because when Prabhupada says sense gratification, I immediately think if we're eating something, that's sense gratification. So to get past that, we're not supposed to do that.
To eat something? We have to eat. And we can enjoy it if it's prasadam. I'm thinking, I think Krishna has tasted this. That's there's a whole chapter in Antilila of Chaitanya Charitamrita where it describes the ecstasy of Mahaprabhu after eating Jagannath prasadam. He's so happy. He should take prasadam.
You're not actually against sense gratification. For Krishna senses, you become happy.
Do you like prasadam?
I do.
Good.
I always feel guilty.
By eating prasadam?
I always feel like it's taking me away from Krishna. From I'm doing something against him. I don't know.
Yeah, but don't worry about it. Just take prasadam. Okay, I think it's. Jim Prabhupada Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai.